Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener Podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast this morning. I'm super excited this morning because today's featured guest is the most downloaded guest of all time on the Organic Gardener Podcast. And here to share with us more of her amazing knowledge from the Creative Vegetable Gardener is Megan Kane. So welcome, Megan.
Thanks, Jackie. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here. So if you're a new listener, Megan did her very first interview back in episode 44. And if you can't find it on iTunes, if you just go to my website, you can get it there and download it there to your phone. And then on episode 70, she talked about making your garden harvest last all year long, which is kind of what we're going to talk about today. And then she was back on episode 115. And also in February, we did a bonus episode with her about her smart start planning guide. And the reason I reached out to her is because Mike has been so busy down with the mini farm. He has already canned 51 pints of beans, 12 pints of pickled beets, 9 pints of carrots, 14 and a half pints of Oregon grape jelly. And when he was making the jelly, he kept going through Megan's book and he kept coming up to me and going, "Hey, do you know about this? Did you know that? Haven't you been asking me about this?" And just all sorts of questions. So I reached out to Megan and said, "Do you want to come back and talk with us again about her amazing book, Super Easy Food Preserving, Quick Techniques for Fresh Fridge and Freezer Storage?" And some of my favorite features in the book is she has just this great worksheet that's right off the bat about, you know, strategically thinking about your garden needs. And I just love worksheets and checklists and questions I wouldn't normally think of, like, what do you want to eat out of season? And what tastes better when we eat things during the local growing season? Because I'm just kind of like, go to the store. Like, I'm not the planner. And Megan's the most awesome planner. So I'll be quiet now and let Megan tell us more about herself and her book and food preserving.
Sounds like Mike's been busy.
He has. Oh my gosh. It's incredible. He finally, this is the first year he's really been able to grow the mini farm. Although he's had challenges this year like we've never had before with like everything from like deer and mice and chipmunks or squirrels pooping on my broccoli. I'm so disappointed. He finally grew enough broccoli for me to last like practically the whole year if I could have. And it's going to the animals, hail the other night and drought and fire season. And so that's us here. It's September 2nd, 2017, by the way, listeners. So, but yeah, he grew a ton and he's been learning a ton because I don't know that he's ever made Oregon grape jelly before.
Cool. That's exciting that he's diving in like that.
Yeah. So,
well, I do a lot of food preserving as well. I lived on a farm, and that was the first time I learned how to garden and preserve. And mostly what we did was canning and a little bit of drying. And so then when I left, and I live in Madison, Wisconsin, and we moved here, and I had a garden, I thought, well, that's how you preserve food, as you can. And so I started canning, but I didn't actually ever really like it. And so after a while, I started to think there's got to be some easier ways to preserve food than canning. And so kind of over the years, I just did research and experimented and talked to other people and started to piece together quicker and easier ways to preserve food than canning. And then over time, I started to tell friends and neighbors and other gardeners some of the things that I was doing, and it seemed like that was a common belief that when people think of food preserving, they think about canning, and that's the only option. But there's lots of different options. So that's kind of what my book explores, is the different options outside of canning. And some people love canning, and I think that's great. If you love it, you should continue to do it. But there are a lot of people that don't have time for canning and don't like it, or just don't, you know, you need certain equipment and you have to have a certain amount of knowledge to can. And so I kind of explore easier ways that where you don't need special equipment and you don't need, you know, you don't have to worry that you're going to kill somebody.
I know. I'm terrified of his, I wouldn't do any of it. That, see, I'm totally your target audience because I don't do any of that. And it takes forever. I'm like, oh my goodness, how long have you spend just cutting the beans, snapping the beans so they fit in the jars?
Right. Right. So, and at our house, we do usually have one or two Saturdays where we can salsa, because it's hard to have, I haven't really found a good substitute for canning salsa. So we do a little bit of canning, but we kind of, in all honesty, it's hard to fit it in, and we kind of dread it when it comes up, but we do it because we love having salsa. So yeah, so my first choice is always fresh storage. So my book talks about fresh fridge and freezer storage. So my first choice is, can I just store the vegetable fresh? So garlic would be a good example. I grow a lot of garlic and I just dry it in my garage. And then once it's dry, I transfer it into boxes and put it in my basement. And then we eat our own garlic all year round. And I don't have to can it, I don't have to freeze it, I don't have to do anything. I just have to dry it and then stick it in my basement. So that's a good example of something that you could store fresh. And then the next category would be fridge. So if I can't store it fresh, then I say, can I store it in the fridge? So beets and carrots are a good example of something that store for a really, really long time in your fridge. I usually grow fall beets and carrots. So I have beets and carrots in my garden right now growing for fall. I leave them in the garden as long as possible because that's really a natural refrigeration, especially in Wisconsin. And then before it gets too cold and the ground freezes, I harvest all those beets and carrots. I just snap off the greens, the tops. Then I pack them into plastic bags and I just shove them all in kind of the bottom and back of my fridge. And they last easily till the next April, May. We've eaten beets in June of the next year. And so that's an example of something that you don't necessarily, you know, some people like canned pickled beets, but we prefer them, you know, when you store things in your fridge, then you can decide later how you want to prepare them. So it's a little bit more versatile. And so that's a good example of something that we store fresh. And then the last category is things that you can freeze. I have a chest freezer, and I recommend that people who are going to get into freezing, a chest freezer is a good investment. Instead of putting things in your upstairs, your refrigerator, freezer. And that's the biggest category. So there's a lot of things that you can freeze. Some things you can just freeze raw. So peppers are a good example. That's actually what we're going to do today at our house. I just harvested a lot of red and yellow peppers from my garden. We'll eat some fresh, but we're just going to take out the seeds and then chop them up and put them in freezer bags and just throw them in the freezer. And then we use them all winter long in all kinds of stir fries and rice and beans and egg dishes. So that's something that you can just freeze raw. And then there's a few things that you have to do a little bit of pre-processing before you freeze them. So broccoli would be a good example. Usually what you want to do is steam it, or you could just kind of flash boil it really quick. Just so that you break it, I always say, like, just until it's bright green. You don't want to overcook it. You want it to still be kind of al dente. So just until it's bright green, and then we take it, put it in we fill up our sink with water and ice, and then we just dump it in to stop the cooking.
That's what he told me. That was the first tip. Because, see, I did, before the squirrels, the first heads of broccoli, I did get to freeze some, and, like, I froze a lot of Swiss chard. Like, my fridge, if I could freeze more, if I have room in my freezer, we keep wanting to get a chest freezer, but I froze a lot of, I like to freeze Swiss chard. My spinach was gone before I could even get close to harvesting it, but I use Swiss chard in place of spinach. And your pepper tip, you taught me. He came to show me the pepper tip, but I already knew that from our first conversation. But I didn't know it before you taught me that.
Peppers are one of my favorite things to freeze because red pepper, and I don't really like green peppers because they're basically just an unripe pepper. So I wait for as many of my peppers as possible to turn red or orange or yellow. And then we freeze them because peppers can be really expensive, especially red peppers at the grocery store. And I think the thing about, you know, some people think like, oh, frozen vegetables, I don't want to eat frozen vegetables. But if you think about how most of us cook in the winter, we cook a lot of stuff. You're making soups and you're making stews and you're making different kinds of things like that. And so it's a, you know, I find like it's fine to use frozen food in something that is going to go in the oven and get roasted or is going to turn into a soup.
For me, it's easier, like, because I'm always throwing like two or three chunks of frozen broccoli on pizza or in my eggs, and the peppers are the same way. And then if they're a little bit cooked already ahead of time, it's just something extra I can just throw in there.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think it actually saves more time and is more efficient in the long run, because I was saying this in a class I taught a couple weeks ago, and I was saying last year I went to the farmer's market in September in Madison. I bought a huge bag of broccoli for $12. We froze it all. It was basically almost all the broccoli we needed for the entire winter. So we froze it, you know, we pre-processed it, steamed it, then froze it. And then that's it. Then we have as much broccoli as we need for this, the whole winter. And I just thought, okay, think about another option is like every 2 weeks you go to the grocery store, you buy some broccoli, it sits in your fridge, then you have to chop it up. I was like, no, we did it all at once. And then we never have to buy broccoli again or chop it. And it's just ready to go. And I think just like you said, a lot of times when we're cooking in the winter, it is a lot when you have frozen vegetables that you've already from your garden, a lot of times like, yeah, we're reaching in a bag and getting some broccoli and throwing it in, and reaching in a bag and getting peppers and throwing it in, or corn. It's like, yeah, a lot of the prep work's already done. So it almost makes winter cooking a little bit easier.
And the other big tip you taught me that I never knew before I talked to you was the thing about the putting stuff on the cookie tray. And that was another one Mike said, did you know this? And I was like, yes, because Megan taught me. Right? Putting it on the cookie tray so it doesn't stick together before you put it in the bag, right?
Right. So I definitely learned that. I think it was the first time I had frozen corn. So I steamed some corn and then I took it off the cob and then I just shoved it all in a bag. And then when I went back to use it a couple months later, it was just frozen into this huge block that I had to chisel corn off of. And so after that, I realized, okay, I should at least pre-freeze it a little bit so everything doesn't stick together. So I do that with raspberries and strawberries, and sometimes I do it with blueberries, depending on how wet they are. I do it with broccoli, anything that you're freezing that's pretty dry. So a lot of times our peppers are pretty dry, so we just throw them right in the bag. But anything that seems like it's kind of wet and it might have the potential to stick together, you can just spread it on a cookie sheet, stick it in the freezer for a few hours, and then once it's even just partially frozen, you can transfer it to your containers.
And a lot of it depends on like how ripe it is. Like raspberries are for us huckleberries. If they're riper and stickier at the beginning of the season when they're fresher, you can probably put them in the bag. But I find a lot of times the huckleberries stick together a lot. So
yeah,
they're good ones for us.
Yeah.
But I never knew you could just throw peppers in the freezer till I talked to you. That was just a huge one for me.
Yeah, that's a really useful one. Actually, last year we had a lot of jalapenos, and so my husband chopped them up and he put them in a separate bags. And then that was actually I think that's the first time we ever froze hot peppers, and that was really convenient because a lot of times you make a recipe and it says like half of a jalapeno or one jalapeno, and a lot of times I would just skip that because we didn't have jalapenos. But this last winter we had a little bag of already chopped jalapenos, so we would just throw a handful in, and that was really great. So that was a new one for us last year that we're definitely going to do again. And even if you don't grow jalapenos, you can just go, they're so cheap, at least the farmer's market around here. My husband went and got we did some canning last weekend, and we didn't have enough jalapenos, so he went to the farmer's market and he got a huge bag for I think $4, $6. So that's another thing that was a big light bulb moment for me in my own food processing, is that I realized that I still go, I have a pretty big garden, but sometimes I still go to the farmer's market to get, well, I like to see what everybody's growing, and it's fun to just be around all the fresh vegetables. But I also go to buy things that I don't grow, like watermelon or cantaloupe or corn, things that I don't necessarily have enough room for. And one year I was down there and I was walking around and I was looking at all the great prices, like 20 jalapenos for $2 or tomatoes for $1 a pound. And I thought, wow, I should preserve some of this food. The prices are so amazing. And that just kind of hit me like a bolt of lightning. And I thought, yeah, I could just buy food from the farmer's market for preserving. I would always thought about it like, oh, I just preserve what's coming out of my garden.
Right.
And I only looked at it with through that frame. And then all of a sudden I shifted and I realized, no, I could just come to the farmer's market. If I don't have enough broccoli to freeze, I'll just go to the farmer's market and buy broccoli to freeze. And so then I realized I don't have to grow everything that I preserve. And since I'm definitely into easy food preserving, sometimes the easiest option is to not grow it and just buy it. So I would definitely encourage all the listeners to think about that, because no matter where you live, September, especially, and certainly in Wisconsin, is really the height of the harvest season, because there's a lot of summer things still at the market, but there's also all the fall things. So it's always my favorite month. It feels like the month that has the most variety of food. People have a ton of food, and so the prices are pretty low, at least in my area. And so you can go and get large quantities of things for not that much money. And then you can do some of the preserving. So if you're listening to this episode and you think, yeah, it'd be fun to chop peppers and freeze peppers, but I don't have enough to freeze, well, go to the farmer's market and see what the prices are and see if you can get some bulk deals, and just chop up some peppers and freeze them. And then if you like it, next year you can plan to grow some more peppers in your garden.
Yeah. And I love the way your book goes through, like, each vegetable has its own page and you've got all the details about, like, favorite varieties for storage, when to harvest, what prep materials you need, best storage containers, how long it will last in storage, other ideas for preserving, favorite recipes. Like, your cookbook just is just like you, and it's strategically written out. The graphic design is just makes it super easy to read, which is, I'm sure, partly why Mike kept bringing it to me, because it was easy for him to read.
Right. Yeah. I wanted to keep it really simple. It's funny that you just said cookbook, because it is, it's kind of like a cookbook layout where you can, if you have a bunch of peppers, you can just turn to the pepper page and see what I recommend for doing for peppers. And then I also included some favorite recipes. So I think once you preserve food, there's a whole nother part of it, which is learning how to cook with the food that you preserve and what kind of recipes. So I feel like over time I've collected my favorite recipes that I use certain things in. And so I share some of those in the book. And there's actually a print book and an ebook. And so if people get the ebook, there's live links. So if I talk about a recipe, you can just click on it and it'll take you right to the website. Some of the recipes are my own recipes, and then some are just favorite ones from the internet and some of my favorite cooking blogs. So that's almost a whole, that's like part two of food preserving, is then how do you use all the food, which takes some practice, I think. But that's something that you want to shoot for, because really most preserved food, it's kind of recommended that you eat it within a year if possible. So it's a good idea to try to focus on that food in the winter and how can you use it up. So we always joke like, oh, we're going grocery shopping in our basement for the ingredients for our dinner. And there's many, many times that we're cooking dinner that we just are using things from the freezer and the fridge and our basement. And actually in our house, we rarely buy any produce in the winter. You know, we'll buy some lemons or limes or, you know, once in a while cilantro or something like that. But we pretty much bypass the produce aisle at the place where we grocery shop and just go right to the bulk food and things like that. So it's a nice way to be able to save money as well in the winter, because the winter is when the prices are at the highest, because the food is coming from Well, unless you live in California. But for most of us, our food is either coming from California or it's coming from the Southern Hemisphere or Australia or New Zealand. So things are coming from far away and the prices are pretty high. So it's a great way to save some money at the grocery store as well.
And save our planet because you're shopping local.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and if you feel, and I think that's one of the reasons why we preserve food, because we feel pretty passionately about eating locally as much as possible. And it's in a cold weather area like Wisconsin, it's pretty difficult in January and February. Our farmer's market's pretty good until about Christmas. And then after that, it's hard for people to still have fresh food. And so if you feel, you know, if you have kind of an ecological values of eating locally, food preserving fits in really well with that. And then also flavor. I think as all of us gardeners and people that shop at the farmer's market know, the things that are coming out of our garden taste way better than anything that you can get at the grocery store. And even when you preserve it, so when we freeze a lot of tomatoes, and when we make sauce out of them in the winter, the sauce is just so amazing. Way better than anything you could ever get at the grocery store. It's so sweet and has so much flavor, even though it's been frozen, or I'm sure people who can sauce, they find the same thing. So just even the taste, even if things are frozen or have been stored for a few months, I find that they still taste way better than anything I can get from the grocery store. So those are a few reasons why I think food preserving is pretty awesome.
And I tell listeners constantly, like in the winter, I just, tomatoes from the store just don't work for me. And so I put Mike's pickled beets on my salad, and it's definitely a different flavor. You know, it's sweet compared to a tomato is maybe not the sweetest. I don't know. Tomatoes are pretty sweet if they're homegrown, but they're just like, I don't even buy tomatoes. And then the other thing I was going to say, like Mike, like our whole goal has been, or his whole goal has really been, like the reason he has the mini farm that we use and he gardens is to be able to grow as much food, as much of our produce, just like you guys do. So we don't have to, you know, to supplement as much of our produce bill through the year. And so, like, that's why the 51 cans of beans, because his goal is one can of beans a week, because he really likes green beans. So 52 would be one a week. And sometimes we eat more than that, because he usually makes, like, a vegetable soup. When I get home on Friday night, we'll have vegetable soup in the winter a lot, and as much of it. And then this year, he had a huge potato harvest, even though we had a vol. And this morning, it's so funny, we're down in the garden, I was taking pictures, our sunflowers finally bloomed, and he saw it, I think. He's like, what was that? It was like a mouse, like, ran right from the potatoes through the corn. He's like, but it wasn't a mouse. I was like, maybe that's our vol. Because whatever it is, I don't know. Well, we think it's a vol because it's eating the potatoes from underground. It's taking bites out of them. But then I guess if it's underground, it's probably not running through the corn. Poor Mike is having the year. No. Even though we're getting tons of stuff. And he grew golden beets this year for the first time. Oh my gosh, the little mini ones. I pretend like they're like lollipops after I just boil them and I just pop them in my mouth. They're so good. How many bites to get to the middle of a golden beet?
Oh yeah, they are really beautiful.
But do you want to, like, so in the back of your book it has that grow a year's worth of gardening challenge.
Yeah, so at the end of my book I kind of put a little challenge out to readers, and I've had people come and say that they've taken the challenge, is to think about one or two vegetables or fruits that you could grow all that you need for the entire year. So that's often, it sounds like Mike is the same way. That's kind of my little challenge to myself. Like, how many things can I grow enough of that we never have to buy them? I think an easy one, depending on how big the listeners' gardens are, is garlic would be an easy one. It's pretty easy to grow. You usually plant it in fall, so you still have time to plant it in October or beginning of November, depending on where you live. And then you harvest it the next July, and it stores really well. That's one of the things that we store in our basement. So we grow enough that we never buy garlic from anybody or the store or anything like that.
Grew his first garlic this year.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
My friend Theodora gave him some finally, so he finally put some in the ground. It is so good. Oh my gosh, to smell it cooking is just to die for.
Yeah, it's so good. And I actually recently learned that in the grocery store in the whole United States, there's usually only one or two garlic varieties. So everything in the grocery store is one or two varieties. And there, and if you look at a seed catalog, there's so many different types of garlic varieties, and some really beautiful purple varieties where the paper, the skin on the outside is purpley. I grow one of those.
He got one of those too.
Yeah, so there's lots of different varieties. So garlic would be an easy one. I think pesto would actually be an easy one if people buy pesto from the grocery store, or we eat pesto with everything. We always have a jar of pesto in our fridge and put it on pizzas and egg sandwiches and pasta and all kinds of things. And so if you have a bunch of basil in your garden, you can freeze pesto in jars so that you would never have to buy any pesto for the whole year. And then I think tomatoes is another good one. So just like you, we don't buy fresh tomatoes outside of the season because they just taste so terrible. But we freeze a lot of tomatoes for sauce. We'll make the sauce later. There's actually, maybe in the show notes, we can put the link. I have a link. I have a blog post where I talk about my favorite way to freeze tomatoes, and I cook them down a little bit and then freeze them in bigger yogurt containers. And we use those for any recipe that calls for chopped canned tomatoes, whole canned tomatoes, diced canned tomatoes, anything that calls for a tomato product, we just use that. So we haven't bought canned tomatoes in many, many years. And then we also use it, we'll put some garlic and onions in a pan and dump one or two yogurt containers of those cooked down tomatoes and make sauce for pasta. And so we never buy pasta sauce anymore either. And so I think it's definitely feasible that people could put away enough tomato products that you never have to buy any kind of cooked tomato product from the grocery store ever again, really.
And that would be a good one if you didn't have, like, we're having a bad year of tomatoes, but like one night I might come through the farmer's market and grab some tomatoes from the farmer's market.
Yeah, and we did that. My husband went to the farmer's market last Saturday morning because we decided we were going to can salsa, but we didn't really have enough tomatoes to make as much as we wanted to. So he just went and bought tomatoes. They were $1.50 a pound for organic tomatoes from one of the local farms. And he just bought, I can't remember how many pounds, but a small or medium-sized bag. And I actually used to grow about 38 tomato plants, and so we'd have lots for canning. But over time, I realized I'd rather just devote that time, that space to other things and just buy the tomatoes when I need extra for canning or some kind of processing, because they take up a lot of room. I live in the city. I have a pretty big garden, but I definitely have limited space. So some people might decide that. Like, over time, I realized, instead of growing 38 tomato plants, I'll grow 15 tomato plants, and then I'll have more room to grow other things that for me are more worth it. And then I'll just buy tomatoes, spend $30 on tomatoes throughout the season for freezing or for canning salsa.
But what's that compared to what you would spend on sauce and salsa during the year?
Right. Yeah. Especially
and
salsa.
It's expensive. Better than what you're normally going to get.
I know. We have not found a grocery store salsa that we like nearly as much as our own salsa. So it's definitely worth it to make it on our own.
Tell listeners about your website and stuff if they're new, because I kind of have some new, like, I just started getting posted on Monday nights on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City. So this will be our third week there. So tell some of them about, like, the Creative Vegetable Gardener, and like your website and your other book.
Sure. So folks can find me at my business is The Creative Vegetable Gardener, but my website is creativevegetablegardener.com without the. But I have a blog that I write posts periodically. People can also sign up for my email list. I send out a little email newsletter every Sunday. This Sunday, well, the next couple Sundays is going to be about food preserving. Also, I filmed a couple videos. So I often film videos in my garden and my kitchen. And sometimes I share those with my general list. So I actually have a link in the next few newsletters to three food preserving videos that I filmed that walk basically show people how easy food preserving can be. So folks can sign up for my email list. They can find the food super easy food preserving book on my website. You can buy the ebook copy, you can buy the print copy. And then I also have a super easy food preserving masterclass where I filmed a whole bunch of videos walking you through different aspects of food preserving, like what supplies you would need, which are pretty simple for the way that I food preserve, but just walking you through some things to think about and tips. And then I have specific videos showing people how I freeze kale and how I freeze broccoli and how I store my carrots and beets for the winter. So if people feel like they want a little bit more guidance, they can find that on the food preserving page. And then I also wrote another book that came out late winter this year, which is all about garden planning. So it's called the Smart Start Garden Planner. It walks people through the process of doing a little bit of planning. I'm not a huge planner. I don't plan out where everything's going to go and all of that. But I learned over the years that the most successful gardeners really are people that have some kind of plan before the season starts. They know what they're going to grow. They ordered their seeds. They've given some thought to the different types of vegetables and what's worth it to grow and what's not worth it to grow. And so folks can find that on my website as well. And then I also run a gardening club, so an online gardening club. It's like a membership site. It's my VIP learning community, and people sign up for the year or they sign up month by month, and we do different learning challenges. So we just finished up how to plant a fall garden. So I film a lot of videos in my garden and walk people through the process of what you can plant for fall, making your own calendar to figure out when you would plant things in your own garden. So we do kind of learning community learning challenges together. And then there's also a big video library, different instructional videos that I've filmed over time on all different kinds of things like food preserving and seed starting and how to grow specific vegetables and how to make your garden more beautiful. So lots and lots. Over time, it's becoming more and more of a stocked library with lots of different videos around different topics.
And Megan's website is gorgeous. If you haven't been there, you've got to go check it out. Her blog is informative. Every time I get her email, I open it up, I read it. It's just full, like, she's just always dropping value bombs. And I was going to say, if you get one of her books, make sure you go to Amazon and give it a review, because that way, I say this for other people, because so I just found this teaching podcast and I'm like, where has this woman been all my life? And why don't her listeners give her more reviews? Because how could somebody who has a great teaching podcast escape my ears? And so I know other people want to know about Megan's book. So share Megan's book if you like it and, you know, write those reviews, because they just help other people who are looking, just like, I don't know, like I've been looking for a teaching podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. It's fun and it's fun for me to hear what people have gotten out of the book as well. And so when people write reviews, I get to kind of see, okay, what did people like about it? Probably someday I'll do another version. It's, you know, a lot of people buy the book and it's fun to hear from people and learn how they've used it and what kind of food preserving they've done.
All right. Well, do you want to tell us what grew well on your garden this year?
Sure. I was just working in my garden right before I came in. I just took out one of my plantings of beans, and I'm gearing up. We're leaving on vacation tomorrow. So I'm doing probably my last planting of the year, except for garlic. I'm going to plant some spinach and some salad mix for the fall. What went well, let's see. I had a really good spring garden. I do some season extension, which maybe we'll talk about sometime. I can come back. But I was last year, I harvested out of my garden 11 months out of 12. So January was the only month that I didn't harvest food out of my garden.
Wow.
And so I've been experimenting with season extension over time. So I had a really great, I had tons of spinach, and I was really on top of my late winter, early spring planting. So I had lots of radishes and turnips and cilantro and all the good spring stuff. And then I would say this summer it's been okay. I got a I got a bacterial infection on a lot of my peppers, so I actually had to rip out 35 pepper plants, which was extremely painful. I started them all from seed, took care of them for months before they went in the garden. I love growing peppers, so I was trying a lot of new varieties because I like to evaluate different varieties. And I ended up pulling out about 35 plants. I still have about 15. I harvested a lot of peppers today, but not nearly the amount that I usually get. So that was one thing that didn't go well.
Can I just quickly, where do you get a bacterial infection? Like in the dirt or?
Well, it kind of depends what kind you get.
Air?
It could come from the seed. It could come from the seed. So it could have came in on a seed and then it spread to all my peppers. So I had a whole bunch in two beds right next to each other and they all got it. But I had another bed of peppers in a totally different location and they did not get it. We had a pretty wet spring and so maybe they kind of had it and then it was exacerbated by the really wet and cool conditions that we had, but they were just losing all their leaves and they weren't really putting on any peppers. And I was afraid that it was going to spread. So I just ripped them all out. So that was depressing.
It's kind of like Mike's broccolis. Like I was just taking a video this morning and they are huge. You know, they're bigger than my head. I mean, they're just these giant things and I'm just looking at them going. And because the squirrels, they take like two bites and run away.
Right. I know. I wish they would just eat like, one whole broccoli plant. You can have it. Just eat the whole thing.
And leave
they do the same thing in our garden. So yeah, we've had a really cool summer here in Madison. Even today I had a little jacket on. I still had shorts on, but it's been very cool. So I'd say my tomato plants aren't really as big as they usually are. We haven't gotten quite the amount of tomatoes. So I was actually complaining to my husband about my summer garden. I said, man, I had such a good start to the season. My spring was really great. Summer, I would say, was like, it's okay. We have had okay eggplant, okay tomatoes, not that great peppers. But I'm really big into fall gardening as well, so I've planted a ton of stuff for fall. And I had really great carrots this year. I tried a lot of different varieties. I had really beautiful purple ones and white ones and yellow ones. So that was really fun. My beets did really well. But I have a lot of stuff coming on for fall. So I have a lot of lettuce and spinach and radishes and beets and carrots and cilantro. And I'm going to plant a little bit more salad mix and spinach today. So I said to my husband, I'm going to redeem myself with my fall garden and hopefully be harvesting out of my garden potentially through to Christmas. Last year, we had a pretty mild fall last year, and I harvested a lot of stuff to bring to my in-laws for Thanksgiving. Beets and carrots and spinach and arugula.
Do you have snow at Thanksgiving? Sorry.
Sometimes we do. We did not this last year.
And not even a frost? Like, you still have that stuff growing?
Well, some of those things can easily survive frost. So beets and carrots, I had them uncovered until December 5th last year. And we got a small snow. And then I was afraid that the ground was going to freeze. I actually have pictures of me in the garden harvesting carrots in the snow on December 6th last year. I always think, like, my neighbors probably think I'm crazy. Like, what? She's still in her garden after it snowed? This is crazy.
No way they're totally jealous going,
yeah,
how
maybe.
Does she do that? Do you? And so they're, like, I'm picturing them in, like, a cold frame. They're just in a
bed? Yeah, it really depends what it is. But carrots and beets can survive really, and you just don't want the ground to freeze because then they turn to mush. So I take them out before the ground freezes. So like I said, we had a pretty mild fall last year, so things lasted a little bit longer. I do have a cold frame and I do build some low tunnels with greenhouse plastic over some of my beds. So there's a lot of things that can survive after the frost into the 20s. But then once you get into like the low 20s into the teens, there's a lot of things that don't survive. So that's when I cover them, some of the things, with some greenhouse plastic, and then can get them to keep going. You know, with the trick with fall gardening is the plant growth does come to basically a stop when you get less than 10 hours of light a day. So I'm trying to just kind of keep things alive so I can continue to harvest, but they're not really growing anymore. So sometime I should come back, maybe even in the winter, I can talk about what I'm harvesting out of my garden. We could do a show on it because it's been really fun. It takes a little bit of experimenting, but I've figured out some of that stuff. And I actually have an online class that people can find on my website that's called Extend Your Harvest, Plant a Fall Garden, where I walk people through the whole process. And next month I'll be filming some videos showing how I build my low tunnels. And then I'm planning on doing a little update video every month throughout the winter to show people what I still have in my garden and what I'm harvesting out of my garden. So yeah, we should come back. I should come back and we can talk all about season extension, because you can also do it at the end of the winter and start harvesting things much earlier than you would be if you just planted them right out into the garden. So it's really fun. And especially for people that live in colder areas like we do, it's a great way to feel like you're getting even more from your garden because you're harvesting in those shoulder months of November and March, where usually there's not a lot of things going on in our gardens, but you can potentially have a fair amount of food. So,
yeah, I planted a late summer or kind of like, it's supposed to be like a fall harvest lettuce garden, but it's not doing very well because I didn't water enough. The arugula is coming up really good. There's like baby cilantros, but I don't know that they're going to make it. But I think listeners are going to be fascinated with this, and especially that they can still get a jump on fall. And I think, like, even though a lot of people may not be in the north where you are, a lot of listeners are in the south where they couldn't grow anything in the summer because it was too hot. And so a fall garden is going to be a good idea for them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a totally different world to live in Texas or, you know, Mississippi and garden. So not something that I know a lot about, but there's a lot of things that they can grow for in the cooler weather of their winter that doesn't get as cold as we get, because we lose a lot of plants because of the intense winters that we have. But even in Wisconsin, there's still spinach will survive the winter with no protection. So there are some options for us cold weather people.
Yeah, we have spinach come up a lot in the spring. If you plant it in the fall, or if you let it go to seed in the fall a lot, it will come up. And Mike's been picking. He has a whole section that he was showing me today that's all volunteers that came back from the compost from last year. He's like, look at these squashes. That's something you eat because that's a volunteer that just came out of the compost. And
oh, cool.
It was fun this morning. So, but I'm going to let you go because I know you're super busy, and thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of this. Listeners, you've got to go to Megan's website, creativevegetablegardener.com, and check out everything she has. Sign up for a class if you want, or get one of her books and let her know, you know, leave a comment or something and let her know how much you appreciate all she shares with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jackie. And yeah, I'd love to hear from folks. Come join my gardening community. I actually run a free Facebook group as well, that if you sign up for my email list, you'll get a little note about it. So I'd love to, yeah, learn more about you and your gardens.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Happy Labor Day.
Yeah, you too.
Hi, everyone. So we have some new listeners. I thought it would be a great time to introduce myself to the Progressive Radio Network audience. And also, we've had lots of new listeners just to the regular podcast. So I had a little time left at the end of Megan and my conversation, so I thought this was a great place to add it. So if you're new to the Organic Gardener podcast, I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer, and I'm married to Mike, who is technically the real gardener. He's been growing vegetables and fruits and flowers for well over 40 years. We live in Northwest Montana in a small cabin on 20 acres. Although we only garden about probably not even an acre of it. And Mike started what I call the mini farm a couple of years ago. So when we first moved here, so let's see, let me back up a little. Like, originally, I'm a New Yorker. I grew up on Long Island, about 20 miles outside of New York City. And I moved to Montana because I read a little book about a girl who moves to Montana from California when I was in fourth grade. And many of my listeners know, but if you're new to the show, you don't know, I'm an elementary school teacher, and this year I'm teaching fourth grade, so I'm so excited about that. I'm reading them the book already. It's called Sasha, My Friend. It's out of print, but you can still get it on Amazon. And it's about this little girl who moves to Montana, and I actually ended up, she moves to right outside of Libby, which is about 50 miles from where I am. But of course, I got the map out, said, there's the trees, that's where I want to be. Came out to go to school at the University of Montana back in 1988, the year of the big Yellowstone fires. Went to U of M for 3 years. My junior year, I decided I needed a break, and my friends all said, you should go plant trees. And one of them hooked me up with this crew up here called the Frog Skinners, and they hired me. And I met Michael on the mountainside about first week in, and we got in a huge fight because I was this hardcore environmentalist, and he worked as a sawyer, a logger, cut down trees for many years, and then he's also a passionate environmentalist. And one thing I've learned since I've been here is that the loggers oftentimes care about the woods and want to protect the woods more than anybody because they live here. And, you know, I was so amazed when I first moved here, I would see like logging truck drivers, they'd be like picking the first wildflowers for their wives or bringing home mushrooms. And like the tree planters were always like singing praises, like as they planted their trees, I can't wait to taste my wife's jelly or her homemade tomato sauce, or they would just go on and on. So lots of people that love each other way up here in the woods. And so Mike and I got married, when I first moved here, we just had a little cabin out in the woods. Like, my dream was always to be Laura Ingalls out in the, but in the mountains, you know, not on the prairie. So, and my house is very much like their house, but a little bit bigger. And the first 6 years we lived here, we didn't have running water. We just had, we had drains, so the water would go out of the house. We just had to haul our water. And then we eventually put in, at the turn of the century, we put in water and electricity and everything. So we went from, you know, having solar panels and just a little bit of light and different things to having like internet and cell phones and computers and dish satellite network and just, but that's where we found Link TV, which I totally love. If you're not checking out Link TV and Free Speech TV and Democracy Now! And all those great things. And so, you know, our goal has been to be self-sufficient. Mike loves to grow, you know, his goal is to grow enough food so that we don't have to buy our produce. He loves to bake bread. He's a great baker. He bakes delicious cookies, and he wants to grow our own wheat and eventually, you know, just try to be as sustainable and self-sufficient and local, you know, grow as much food locally as we can. And then a few years ago, we finally put in a new well. So we had a shallow well. Now we have a deep well that's like 560 feet deep. So he planted what I call the mini farm. And so just our goal is to help you create your own organic oasis, whether you just want to do some natural landscaping. My brother's episode about composting on Long Island and natural landscaping has been a very popular downloaded episode. I have listeners from around the world. Kim Romanel from New Zealand was a very popular episode about cruelty-free living. John Moore is another one of the greats who's listened to us in the beginning, has a podcast called World Organic News over on the other side in Australia. And just podcasting's been a great way for me to meet my peeps and make new friends, who some who live just really close to me here, even in my own town. I met people that just believe the same way I do. And so if you're enjoying the show, if you have gardening questions, if there's anything we can do to help you develop your own organic oasis, I'd love it if you check out the podcast. I mean, I'm just the humble host. Really, my guests are amazing. And that's what's made my show grow and be successful, because I call my audience the green future growers. So if you're interested in growing a greener future, I interview everything from backyard gardeners to market farmers to people who have businesses that are related to sustainable agriculture, whether they're, you know, selling organic ice cream or creating lip balms or, you know, selling sustainable coffee or building green homes. Just anybody who's working on creating a sustainable future. I love biographers. My real dream goal is to be a children's book illustrator someday. And I just love learning about people. I really want to specialize on biographies. And so, I haven't mentioned our websites, the organicgardenerpodcast.com, but I also have a main website at awesomemontana.com, and that has links to both the podcast and my artist website. And so just I love technology. I've been a podcaster for since 2015. John Lee Dumas and his amazing girlfriend Kately Erickson have a podcasting group called Podcasters Paradise. That's where I learned how to podcast. So if you have any questions about podcasting, I love to talk about that. And they're just a great couple to follow if you want to learn anything about building an online business. Like, even if you're not going to have a podcast, you can learn about blogging from them. You can learn about marketing, funnels, just any kind of email capture, like anything YouTube. They really webinars. I always thought Mike would actually have the podcast in the beginning, and even in the real beginning, I was like, are people really gonna like listen to a gardening podcast? But we do. We listen in our gardens. We listen in the car. We listen when we're exercising. We listen when we're folding the laundry, because the guests that I have on my show, just their stories are so interested, and we're always interesting, and we're always sharing tips on how to be more successful and how to protect our planet and just how to share that. Everyone's really big on education and sharing with their kids. And like a lot of my guests have said, like one of the questions I ask is, tell us about your very first gardening experience. Were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? What did you grow? A lot of us talk about we hated gardening when we were kids, especially teenagers, but we also have very fond memories of being with our grandparents or being with our parents in the garden. And so I always encourage everybody, if you have a child or a grandchild or a niece or a nephew who's kind of being resistant to gardening, just play it off, try to make it fun, try to get them to enjoy it as much as they can, because you might be planting that little seed, and later on in life they are going to turn around and just cherish those memories of you being together. And so Mike and I have, he has two daughters. So I have two stepdaughters, but we have five grandkids, I call them, because they were all born way after we were married. And so they love, the grandkids love to come pick carrots and hang out in the garden. And just, we just try to support the environment and do what we can to help you and teach you how to live a sustainable life. So if you have questions, if we don't know the answer to them, we'll do our best to find you the answer, and just hope you'll connect. I have a little Facebook group called the Organic Gardener Facebook Podcast, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. I'll put the links in the show notes. And then today's episode with Megan Kane, like I said, she's been the most downloaded episode from the beginning, because I think she just has such a valuable blog and shares so much. And just I'm working on creating some golden seed newsletter and just kind of summarizing my show notes. But because I almost always have a full-time job while I'm podcasting, I did take a break from teaching, which did help me get the podcast started. And then Mike and I delivered the paper every day for, I don't know, 16 months or something, which was neat because I drove through the night and got to listen to podcasts, and it was the only way I could get the show off the ground. And but then, I don't know, there must be a teaching shortage, because like six principals called me last summer and I ended up going back into the classroom. Last year I taught second grade. This year I'm going into fourth grade. And so it's hard enough for me, but I already have enough episodes in the bank to make it till Christmas that I recorded this summer, although they're not quite edited. So I just do my best. My show notes, I try to make sure all the links are there, and then I pretty much just transcribe while we're talking. So that's our story, a little introduction to Mike and I. Mike's kind of shy, so I still haven't got him to do an interview with me, but I'm hoping one of these soon days. He'll get on. He has been letting me take little videos of him. So he has a wealth of knowledge. He's been gardening for a long time and has learned a lot of tips and secrets. But also, we've learned a lot since we started the podcast. We got a broad fork this year, which, if you don't know what that is, actually, the first ones to recommend that were some farmers on Long Island. And so just anything you want to know, or anything we can do to help you, whether you're, planting a basil plant on your windowsill in an apartment, or you want to learn about composting, that's one of my favorite jobs. Or if you want to learn how to grow enough potatoes to make it through the winter, or you want tips, like even if we don't know them or your climate's very different from ours here in Montana, you know, I can reach out to some people. Like somebody had asked me about gardening in Texas, and so last week's episode was with a gardener from Texas who responded to me and just booked it right away. And some people are quicker about booking a interview, and I still try to do them either before school starts. I'm definitely a morning girl. I'm still complaining about daylight savings time because in Montana it stays light way too late. It's hard to go to sleep, and then it's hard to get up in the morning. So but I'll get up, or on the weekends or holidays I'll just do whatever I can to share your story. So if you have a garden and like to talk about gardening and want to tell us some, you know, reach out to me. You can reach me. My email is orgpodcast@gmail.com. Or a lot of times they get sent from mikesgreengarden@gmail.com, which is Mike's email. I don't know why, even no matter where I send them from. So that's a little bit about Mike and I. I'm so glad you could join us. If there's anything we can do for you. And then I am just going to like suggest, if you are new and you haven't left us a review on iTunes and you like what you share, or you like what you hear and you want to share it with a friend, it really to me is about helping other people that are looking for this information. Like when I find a podcast I've been looking for, like I just found the amazing Angela, oh my gosh, her Truth for Teachers, and she's actually in New York, in Brooklyn, Truth for Teachers podcast. I just found it. I've been looking for it all my life. Angela Watson. And like, I wish her listeners would send more, would put more reviews up. So check us out on iTunes. Our website again is organicgardenerpodcast.com. And just, we'd love to hear from you. And if there's anything we can do, let us know. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you would head over to iTunes and give us a hopefully 5-star review. It really helps us get found and share the knowledge with other listeners. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.